Welcome to the CSIS podcast, a look at the week's news and foreign policy through the eyes of the experts at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm Colin Quinn. While the international community has been focused on Greece's economic meltdown, where lifelines and deadlines trade back and forth, the world's second largest economy has suffered an enormous setback. In recent weeks, China's stocks have dropped almost 30% in value, wiping almost $2 trillion of investors' money off the books. It's a sign of a general slowdown in the Chinese economy and a reflection of the heights these stocks had reached to be able to fall so far. The Chinese government, for its part, has taken action, banning any new IPOs, halting some trading firms from selling shares, and forcing others to buy. The approach seems to have stemmed the bleeding for now, but it's a reminder of the delicate nature of the nascent Chinese dream and what those in power are willing to do to sustain it. To help us explain what's going on and how this affects the world is Scott Kennedy, Director of the Project on Chinese Business and Political Economy at CSIS.
When Xi Jinping and his colleagues came into power in 2012, the economy was doing relatively well, but it obviously needed a whole variety of reforms to get them to the next level to avoid falling into a middle-income trap. And in addition, there had been a buildup of debt, particularly in real estate, and that was a drag on the economy. So they've been trying to engineer a strategy which at once reforms all the reforms the economy and restructures it, and at the same time doesn't require the economy to grow too slowly, because that they don't want to induce a recession, they don't want to induce opposition, and so they're trying to balance both reform and growth at the same time. Over the last year, they've introduced a variety of stimulus measures, the money supply, interest rates, encouraging investing in the stock market, approving buying stocks on margin, a variety of things. And what that did is cause the stock markets in China to run up dramatically, to double their value very quickly. The consequence of that is that that's just growing way too rapidly, and they create a bubble. And that bubble has burst over the last few weeks, with the stock market since June 12 losing over 30% of its value. Since late last week, Chinese government has rolled out a series of interventions to stop that slide, doing things which we would almost never think of doing in the United States, including suspending new initial public offerings, creating a fund to buy up unwanted shares, suspending the trading of some firms whose shares had fallen a lot, a whole variety of different measures. That has been seen as heresy. But that heresy has paid off at least the past couple days, with the declines stopping and cumulatively from late Wednesday to the closing of the market in China on their Friday, it rising by 10%.
And what's interesting about this is that it's a dent, I suppose, to the all-encompassing nature of Xi Jinping's rule, in that everything seemed to be very calm, everything seemed to be very much ordered. Can you rebound from kind of a crisis of confidence like this where they're kind of been caught short?
I think they can. This is, in some ways, a socialization process. China's leaders being socialized by markets, and at the same time, all of us getting used to Xi Jinping's management style. And they can coexist, at least they have so far. Every country that has a stock market, that has some sort of market economy, goes through ups and downs, through substantial swings. China's no different. It's just that they are so used to a government intervention and expect it because that's a sign of authority, that they weren't going to sit back and just wait for the market to bottom out, because they didn't know where that bottom was. And they had already let it come down about 30%. So they were going to intervene. That was really, in their view, the only choice that they had. Of course, if the market next week continues its slide and doesn't, just waves at these interventions as it goes down even further, that will create more political trouble for Xi Jinping.
And talking about the global aspect of this now, obviously China has about, depending who you ask, about 15% of world GDP. But the Chinese stock market's kind of unique in stock markets in that it shouldn't have that much of a global impact.
That's the surprising thing about this crisis. We've got an economy like Greece, 1/20th the size of China. its debt problems rippling across the world very quickly. China's having barely any effect on markets outside the country. And that's because the way those two countries are integrated in the world are quite different. Greece runs on euros. It's borrowed a lot from abroad. It's part of the European Union, common monetary system, therefore huge effect. China, its own currency, lots of capital controls. The Great Firewall of China financially is actually even higher than the Great Firewall on the internet. And so we are all, in some ways, lucky that we're protected from Chinese volatility. And that's something that's, you know, eventually we want China to, its financial system to be more integrated. We want, investors want greater access to China's market. We want capital flows to be able to flow in one direction, in both directions. At the time, for the present, we don't have that, but that's provided some safety to us.
And I mean, the people affected by this, it's under 10% of the Chinese population are investing in the Chinese stock market. I mean, obviously, that's still millions and millions of people. Now, what are they going to think about this in terms of how they view the leadership and how they trust the leadership to be able to steward the country?
China's not a democracy. That's where you start with this. And they know that they don't have a say in who in the leadership. But they do know that over the past 36 years, China's economy has grown faster than any other country during that time and during any other country during any other period in human history. So this is a party and a government that has a lot going for it in terms of proof of concept. And so even with this short-term decline, that they have a big reservoir of support to draw on. And you know what? It's investors have to take some responsibility. They bought on margin. They took the risk. And part of the transition is getting investors to realize that it's not only the leadership's fault, it's their fault. This government is very sensitive to that, and it's one of the reasons they intervened. They're also concerned about the balance sheet of state-owned enterprises and others, which are their own. It's a tricky situation. There, unfortunately, is no one right or wrong answer in this.
And isn't it an exuberance thing that perhaps this rising middle class have been looking for a way to spend their money and looking for a way to invest and perhaps just aren't savvy to that yet?
Well, I think the Chinese government is addicted to intervention. The Chinese populace is addicted to Chinese government intervention. And they had invested heavily in the real estate sector because the government had thrown a lot of money in it over the last 15 years. And you knew that that was a one-way bet up. And many of my friends in the Chinese middle class all got on that train in the last 15 years, and they're houses and apartments skyrocketed in value, but the debt bubble in real estate threw a fear of God into many of them, including the party, and so they were trying to redirect pent-up demand for investment toward the stock market, and so that's the signal that investors all across China read, but markets don't go up forever, whether they are managed markets by a government or free markets like we have in the U.S.
And, I mean, we talked about the property market there. What does the Chinese leadership's reaction to the stock market dip tell us about what might happen if something bigger happened, if a bigger bubble was to burst?
Well, if a bigger bubble is burst in China, which I don't think that's very likely, but if it were, then that would lead to much slower growth than we've had already. The economy now is growing at about 6.5 to 7%. Down from the glory days of 5 to 6 years ago when it was growing at 12-13%. It could still go, it could drop much further. It could go down to 2 or 3% if this becomes a full-blown economic crisis, not just a stock market crisis. And then it's not just real estate, it's the rest of the real economy would also suffer. I don't think that's very likely because China's stock market accounts for only 3% of all new financing in China each year. And it's still an economy that runs on bank loans and to some extent bonds now. So there's still plenty of savings in households and retained earnings in companies, and the government itself has a pretty darn good balance sheet, so that if the stock market continues to go down, even if it went to zip, which isn't really physically possible, but if it lost another half of its value, for example, there's enough cash sitting around in different parts of the economy to reinflate the economy.
And finally, looking ahead, how will we know that these interventions worked, or what signs should be looking for that this was more of a blip?
Sure. Of course, we can't judge for sure which way the market's going to go. If I did know for sure, I wouldn't be working at CSIS. I'd be working in a hedge fund. If things do continue to improve, and we're trying to look for what is that marker of that they're out of the crisis and back on the right path, medium to long term, we're going to see that in growing investment across the economy, and also in the continued rollout of a series of economic reforms that we expect to happen in the second half of this year. Reforms for state-owned enterprises, reforms for opening up China's capital account, and continuing internationalization of the renminbi so that it can join the IMF's SDR basket of currencies and have it act in some ways as a global reserve currency. There are a series of reforms that we should expect to see if the government is confident enough that they've overcome this crisis and that they can continue on the path which they started on in November of 2012.
And that was Scott Kennedy, bringing us to the end of this week's show. For more, you can visit csis.org and stay up to date on the latest issues in foreign policy. Until next week, I'm Colm Quinn. Thanks for listening.